Thank you, Marshall. You may begin.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Jessen, Judge Rodenberg, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes, Jr. presiding.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, April 6, 2022. We have five cases on our calendar for today, two of which are set for oral argument. We will be holding those via zoom.gov. No recordings are allowed of this argument. However, it will be recorded. We will be following all the other rules of procedure and decorum. We will have 15 minutes for oral argument by appellant's attorney, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant's attorney, if you so choose. We will make sure that if there are any issues that anybody runs into, with respect to the technology, for instance, if somebody drops off or it has a bad connection, we will stop the proceeding and make sure that everybody has the appropriate amount of allotted time to address that issue. Please let us know if for some reason that you do. I understand that your connections have been checked and everything looks good so far. So we will go ahead and proceed. Counsel for appellant, please state your name for the record, the party you're representing, and you may proceed. And note that there is a clock on there so you can see how much time you have as well. You may proceed, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Attorney Brian Van Meveren, VanMeveren, appearing via Zoom on behalf of appellant Andrew Jakes. The district court erred in two significant ways. First, when it violated Mr. Jakes' due process rights by allowing testimony to proceed after counsel for Jakes lost Zoom connection and failing to add sufficient safeguards. And secondly, the district court erred when it abused its discretion when it made specific findings of domestic abuse, which were not supported by any of the evidence on the record. Because of these errors, Mr. Jakes has lost his fundamental right to raise his children. Because of these errors, we are requesting the court here today to reverse and remand to the district court for a new evidentiary hearing. This novel case is a case of first impression in Minnesota courts in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. As a matter of law, there was insufficient evidence to make a finding of domestic abuse. As the court is aware, a district court's decision to grant an OFP is reviewed under an abuse of discretion standard. A district court abuses its discretion if its findings are unsupported by the record or if it misapplies the law. More specifically, a trial court's decision to issue an order must be supported by a preponderance of an evidence, which the Supreme Court has interpreted to mean more probable that the facts exist, that the contrary exists. Appellant recognizes that appellate courts may not sit as fact finders and are not empowered to make or modify findings of fact. Counsel for Jakes also recognizes that appellate courts may not determine issues of credibility. However, that is not the case here. In the case before us, we have two specific findings of facts which are wholly unsupported by the evidence in the record. First, the trial court found that respondent intentionally inflicted fear upon petitioner by arguing, raising his voice, and throwing items around the yard. The children observed this. However, that is not reflected in any of the evidence before the court. That was not reflected in Ms. Butler's petition. And more importantly, in her testimony at trial, she stated that she saw Mr. Jakes outside of the house and placing items outside the door and throwing items. It was at this point she testified that she sent the children upstairs. There is no testimony or any further evidence indicating that the children observed this. Secondly, the trial court also found that Jakes threatened to shoot Butler. That is specific finding number two in support of its finding of domestic abuse. However, Ms. Butler did not state Jakes threatened to shoot her in either her original petition for the order for protection or even while providing testimony to the court. The court did not need make any credibility determinations with relation to these findings. It was simply never even alleged by Ms. Butler. And I think that's very important in the case before us.
And but Mr. Menmirin, doesn't the record show that he threatened to shoot the children and then his brother and father?
Yes, Your Honor. And the order.
So the only issue here is whether the district court referenced the wrong people, but the incident and the threat of somebody being shot by appellant is accurate, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. The issue that we take issue with is that the finding says respondent threatened to shoot petitioner, which is unsupported by any evidence in the record.
But he did threaten to shoot the children, correct?
That was the finding by the court, yes.
Okay, so that would support at least the OFP with respect to the children then.
Well, Your Honor, the children were never aware of the threat. And the children had no reasonable fear of this. It was never, they had no knowledge of the threat, and it was never communicated to them.
Okay, so is any case law support the idea that children have to be aware of a threat? I mean, why can't a parent or guardian who hears of a threat toward children act to protect them?
Certainly, Your Honor, point well taken. That is not a requirement that the children have knowledge of the threat. But Your Honor, it's our point. You are point well taken. You are correct that the children did not have to have actual knowledge of the threat and or be in fear, in imminent fear of their safety.
Don't you think, Mr. Van Meveren, that in the context of a domestic violence incident, threatening a mother to shoot her children isn't sufficiently terrorizing to constitute domestic abuse standing alone?
Absolutely, Your Honor. If in fact that threat was actually true, as noted in the record, the petitioner's testimony and credibility was impeached in several instances, and it can be deduced from that that the threat did not occur.
But to be sure, your client doesn't agree with it, and there was a dispute about that fact question at the hearing before the district court, but the district court seems to have made that credibility determination with respect to that particular threat.
That is correct, Your Honor. They did make that credibility determination. However, they did not have, we did not have a full opportunity to contest or object to all of the testimony. Importantly, the court said that counsel for Jakes had impeached her in several instances. In fact, she was impeached in almost every instance in which counsel had an opportunity to cross-examine and object her. I believe that the only instance in which she was not impeached is when counsel was not present at the hearing and had no meaningful opportunity to object to any testimony because there was no testimony heard, which would further implicate that any of the testimony that there was insufficient, that there was not a preponderance of the evidence that she to find an order of protection.
But if I may, Mr. Van Meveren, I read through the transcript of the hearing, and I couldn't tell when, I mean, you're saying that there are parts where counsel wasn't present. I couldn't tell when that was. And, you know, clearly the counsel was present during at least some of it, making objections, as you point out, and at the end. And, you know, help me if I'm missing something, but I didn't see anything in the record where counsel objected to not being present or brought this to the court's attention. I just don't see how we have a record to even rule on that.
Absolutely, Your Honor. That question is fundamental. So this question highlights one of the key problems of adopting the Zoom platform while adopting no additional safeguards to protect litigants' due process rights. Counsel for Jakes, in fact, did object. The reason there is no objection reflected on the transcript is simple. The court was unable to hear anything Jake's counsel stated because the technology failed. Appellant did enter objections on the record, but they were not picked up properly by audio recording unbeknownst to Jake's counsel. That is the very issue before the court.
But did counsel have anything in the record? I'm sorry, Judge Reyes.
Go ahead, Judge Jessen.
Do we have anything in the record before the district court that affirms what you just said, that there were objections made on the record which were not picked up by through technology. I just want anywhere.
No, it was not adequately preserved in the record. However, reviewing page 9, line 16, 17 and 18, response counsel lost technology or lost Zoom connection, and it was in and out beginning around line 1 on page 9. And if you review line 17 and 18, it is clear. All right, Ms. Butler, you did submit some hearing exhibits. Mr. Van Meveren, let's go off the record.
Okay, but is there anything, but that doesn't show or indicate any objection by counsel that said, wait a minute, hang on a second. I lost my audio, I lost my video, I lost both. There's no opportunity given for the district court to remedy the situation if that did indeed occur.
Your Honor, and I understand the court's concern and I understand your point. However, I would contend that it was very clear that connection was lost. The court had the opportunity to go back to re-begin testimony, and we did object. And we did state that we were unable to hear any testimony. But again, Your Honor, that is not
objection. Did you make that objection on the record?
Yes, Your Honor, but it was not picked up by audio recording.
Okay. If the allegation that you're making that the attorney and the client lost a connection, at some point, did you reestablish the connection?
Yes.
Okay. After the connection had been reestablished, is there anything on the record in the transcript, and I carefully read the transcript as well, is there anything in the transcript that indicates that anybody lost their connection at any time?
Other than line 17 and 18, which was prior to when the court first realized or became aware, there is nothing beyond that reflects that.
Then going to Judge Jessen's well-taken point and question, what is there for us to review? Because there's nothing in the record indicating that this actually occurred. There's nothing in the record indicating what, if any, remedy the district court applied. And without that, that issue appears to be forfeited. It's being raised for the very first time on appeal. But what do we have to review?
Your Honor, I mean, that is the exact issue. That is the exact reason that we are before the court, because the court did not make sufficient constitutional safeguards to protect his due process rights.
But how can the district court provide any safeguards if there's no objection being made on the record by the defendant?
Your Honor, it was the defendant's counsel's understanding that they were on the record. It was unbeknownst to counsel that they were not being recorded. As the court is maybe aware, it was our understanding that our objections were on the record. We had no way to know that they were not on the record. When we had lost connection, I'd called back in on my phone. We were in the process of buffering in and out, and objections were made. And it is unbeknownst to us that those objections were not recorded. We had no way to know that those objections were not recorded. If we were in a regular courtroom, this would not be an issue, which is exactly why his due process rights were violated by not making additional safeguards, or in the very least, to backing up to where connection was lost.
So Mr. Van Meveren, I mean, you knew that you lost the connection because then you knew you had to reconnect on your phone, right?
We attempted to do it by phone, and then later we did it by computer again once the connection was reestablished in my law office.
And obviously you did reconnect because we see your questioning in the transcript, right?
Correct.
Okay. So what I would expect, and I'd just like your response to this, if that happened, would there be an offer of proof that you would make about this? And that way the district court would understand from your perspective what happened and be able to say, okay, do we have to go back and, you know, redo some of this testimony? And that would give the district court the ability to address your concerns at the time. And I don't understand, and taking your word that that's what happened, that why you didn't do that.
In your honor, it was my understanding that our objection was reflected and was recorded on the record. So there was no concern to repeat the objection that had already been made. And it was more than obvious to everyone in the courtroom, including the petitioner, that Zoom connection was lost. It was more than clear. In fact, respondent didn't even allege in the petition that we didn't. And it was never argued that we didn't lose connection. That was not even an argument made by respondent in this matter. And I just want to say one point. There's a very important distinction in this case among all other Zoom hearings when a connection is lost. I think that important distinction is that there was findings of fact on page 9 that counsel for Jakes lost connection, that was specifically used in making a finding of domestic abuse in the order for protection. And I think this case can be distinguished from all other cases in Zoom when a connection is lost. I think that's very important for the court to consider.
Judge Reyes, time's running out, but may I ask one additional question of counsel?
Yes, please.
It seems to me, and I just pulled the rules of civil appellate procedure, I thought I remembered Rule 11005, and I did remember it correctly. Doesn't that allow provision for counsel to make a request of the district court to correct or modify the record? That is, if something's missing, there's a rule that allows you to bring that to the district court's attention. Why wasn't that done?
Under order for protections, there is no ability to request a new hearing this is his only.
I'm not asking about a new hearing. I'm asking about why Rule 11005 wouldn't apply to correct the record by bringing this issue to the district court's attention so that in turn, we might have a record on appeal.
At the time it was, again, we did not receive the transcripts in time to attempt to correct the record. By the time that we had reviewed by the time that we'd received the transcripts, we'd already started the appellate procedure.
Maybe you want to take a quick look, and you can leave it for rebuttal, but maybe you want to take a quick look at 11005, because I don't see that rule is limited in its application to before preparation of the transcript. In fact, I would think by its terms, it would apply to correct the transcript, but time is out. So I'll let you consider whether you want to address that on rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal, so you can address that or any other issue that you would like to at that time.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record and the party you're representing. And please be mindful, we do have a clock on the screen, so you can keep track of your time. Please proceed.
Good morning, judges. May it please the court. My name is Corey Kaberbeg, attorney for Mara Butler, the respondent in this matter. Your Honors, after being presented with overwhelming evidence of a long history of abuse, including recent threats of violence, the district court correctly issued an OFP against appellant for the benefit of the minor children and Ms. Butler for a period of 6 months. We respectfully request that this court affirm the lower decision. And unfortunately, this is not a novel case. It is a fairly standard textbook case of domestic abuse. Your Honors, my client has been subject to physical, emotional, and psychological abuse from the appellant since October of 2013. It's resulted in several DANCO orders, arrests, and DANCO violations. Ms. Butler filed the OFP petition on the belief that someone would be killed if she did not take action. In the OFP petition, Ms. Butler described four recent incidents of abuse, including one where appellant was drinking rum and becoming angry. When Ms. Butler told him she intended to dump out the rest of the bottle, appellant threatened, among other things, to shoot the minor children in the face. In another incident, appellant became enraged after drinking and looking through Ms. Butler's phone. He woke Ms. Butler up by shaking her and yelling at her, putting her in fear of physical harm and emotional abuse. The children were present and observed appellant throwing things at the front door. Based on the record and those two instances of domestic abuse, Judge Taylor issued an OFP against appellant for the benefit of Ms. Butler and the minor children for a period of 6 months. We are here on appeal from appellant Andrew Jakes. The district court has broad discretion to grant relief under the Domestic Abuse Act under McIntosh. This court reviews the record in the light most favorable to the district court's findings and reverses only if they have a definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been made. The court does not reverse because they view the evidence differently and does not reconcile conflicting evidence or decide issues of witness credibility. Those are the exclusive province of the fact finder under Pachovnik. District court did not abuse its discretion in ordering the OFP. Its findings are supported by the record and it correctly applied the law. The Domestic Abuse Act is a remedial statute that receives liberal construction in favor of the injured party. The court can infer, quote, present intent to inflict fear of imminent physical harm, bodily injury, or assault, continuing from the totality of the circumstances, including history of past abusive behavior, end quote, under Pachovnik. Ms. Butler documented the history of physical, emotional, and psychological abuse by appellant dating back to October 2013 in her OFP petition. She described four recent incidents and an additional incident at the hearing. The judge determined that at least two recent incidents occurred and were sufficient to grant the OFP. The judge likely considered the totality of the circumstances in finding that Ms. Butler was in fear of imminent harm to herself or her children. And any one of the recent incidents alone is enough to justify granting the OFP. Viewing the record in the light most favorable to the district court's findings, the lower decision is correct and no additional fact finding is necessary.
Ms. Butler had a reason. On that point, if an underlying finding of fact is clearly erroneous, and then the conclusion of the district court is founded in part on that erroneous finding of fact, isn't there room for remand for amended findings? This concerns the question of who the respondent allegedly threatened to shoot and that the district court found to have been true, but at least a portion of that underlying finding of fact does not appear to be supported by the record.
Yeah, so I agree that the characterization of the facts in the decision are not perfect. Decisions are issued quickly in these cases in order to protect people from being harmed before the decision is issued. So there was an issue about whether a felon had threatened to shoot Ms. Butler directly, and that was not testified to. That didn't appear in the petition, but it does appear in the order. So but appellant did threaten to shoot the children, and it is foreseeable that a mother would act to protect her children. And if Ms. Butler was there while her children were being attacked with a gun, she would be in the line of fire. She would be most likely right in front of them. So that is a finding that is supported by the record, that the judge made the finding that Ms. Butler, in addition to her children, was in danger of being shot with a gun. And that is a reasonable finding. There's no need to go back and correct the record in that respect. Butler had a reasonable fear of physical harm, and her testimony supports the district court's finding that the appellant acted aggressively towards her. The district court did not need to make a specific finding that the minor children were in fear for their safety. Children are specifically protected under the Domestic Abuse Act, and it is enough that Ms. Butler was afraid for their safety as well as her own. Asking the children of 4 and 6 to testify would simply further traumatize them and would not change the outcome. In addition, appellant did not request that the children testify at the hearing and has waived that argument on appeal. The district court judge made a credibility determination stating, quote, I would say for the record that I agree with counsel that Ms. Butler's credibility was in many instances impeached. I would also say that the testimony of Mr. Jakes was also, I was critical of that in terms of the bias, obviously, that he has given the situation with the breakup, end quote. Judge continued that, quote, on balance, I believe that domestic abuse occurred and that's why I'm issuing the order, end quote. That credibility determination and factual finding should not be disturbed. Appellant has waived his right to bring a due process argument. He now claims that he temporarily lost connection to the hearing at his attorney's office. There's no evidence in the record that that happened. And if it happened, appellant has not shown that he was prejudiced or that it would change the outcome. I feel like to raise the issue during.
If I may stop you there, because after counsel for appellant pointed us to page 9 of the transcript, I've been going back and taking a look at that, because and he'll correct me on rebuttal if I'm mischaracterizing this, is saying that where the court said, okay, let's go off the record, that was the point, you know, where it would, which I assume he means are going off the record because there's recognition of this, the problems with the Zoom platform. But that is, when going to your prejudice point, kind of during petitioner's testimony about the July 17 and 18th incident, which might go to prejudice. So I'd like your comment on that, number one. And then two, and perhaps both of you could address this. When the court goes back on the record, the judge says, the court did look at its notes from when we were interrupted with another case this morning. At that point, I've been talking about exhibits. When I look at that transcript, I think, well, that break was not because there was a problem with connectivity. It was actually because they were interrupted with another case. So if you could comment on both of those aspects of the due process argument, I would appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks, Trish. I think both of those questions are tied together, and you hit it on the head there. There's multiple off-the-record discussions regarding exhibits, evidence. There are other cases going on, and there were multiple breaks throughout the hearing. So this is exactly one of those breaks. The discussion was held to discuss the exhibits. The court prefaced this with, okay, all right, Ms. Butler, you did submit some hearing exhibits. Mr. Van, let's go off the record. So the indication here is that they went off the record to discuss the exhibits. The court paused the proceedings to deal with another matter, and then they went back on the record. There's nothing about Mr. Jakes or his attorney losing connection. So Mr. Jakes has waived that issue on appeal. The appellant's argument that the hearing should have been recorded also fails. It is not the court's practice to record hearings, whether in person or via Zoom. The appellant has not pointed to any rule that would even allow recording the hearing. The appellant's argument that his due process rights were somehow violated by a common practice of the court is without merit. In addition, he never requested that the court record the hearing and has waived this argument as well. Even if a change was made to record future hearings, it would not affect the outcome of this case. Appellant and his attorney had full opportunity to participate in the hearing, question witnesses, engage in discussions with the judge, and bring up the issues they now attempt to bring on appeal. Appellant chose to take the hearing in his attorney's office rather than using courtroom technology. As appellant concedes, he is unable to request a new hearing in this case. The concern that an OFP may prejudice appellant in a separate custody action is not sufficient cause for reversal. Since I see I have a little more time here, I want to discuss the transcript a little bit further. So reviewing the transcript, the appellant had multiple opportunities to object, ample opportunity to question both parties and a police officer regarding the relevant incidents. There's no evidence in the record that the appellant missed any part of the hearing. There were multiple 5-minute breaks before the decision which it was issued, multiple discussions off the record with counsel. The appellant discussed filing an HRO during the hearing, and counsel even admitted that an HRO may be appropriate. We discussed impeachment. Ms. Butler was impeached on only very minor points. There was no evidence to show that the incidents were made up or did not happen, and they are in fact fully supported by the record. One of the issues she was impeached on was that she contacted the appellant's girlfriend's parents and not her directly. It's a very minor issue. It's a simple misunderstanding. There is another impeachment about her being intoxicated during the earlier incident. The parties have been drinking together. In addition, the second incident with the threats occurred a month later, so that is why she would not have reported that to the police during the first incident, in addition to being afraid of the appellant. The children were present during the first incident. The children were threatened. That is enough to include them. Ms. Butler was in fear for her safety. That was enough to order the OFP to protect her. So again, the appellant had ample opportunity to participate. There were no objections made on the record about losing connection. The judge did not rule on it. An attorney should know if an objection has been heard on and ruled on by the judge or not. We just don't have evidence of that in the record. And as the court has said, there's nothing for them to rule on that issue. It was not obvious to anyone that appellant may have lost connection. No, the court never mentioned it. Ms. Butler never noticed it, according to the record. And I will briefly conclude there. The hearing and decision are constitutionally sufficient and supported by the record. Respondent respectfully requests that the court affirm the decision of the district court ordering the OFP after multiple instances of domestic abuse. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal, and we've got the clock ready to go, so you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I'm going to touch on Judge Jensen's question in regards to the breakout rooms and what was discussed. As an initial matter, Mr. Kolbervig makes many statements about what happened at the trial, which is a little bit profound given the fact that Ms. Butler was pro se and he was not present at the hearing. There were not significant off-record breakout rooms to discuss any evidentiary or exhibit issues. It went off break when the counsel for Jakes lost Zoom connection and there was a pause. The court chose to take another case, which is reflected again in the record. And Your Honor, this entire case is a catch-22. This is a novel case. This is the case of first impression in Minnesota. If counsel for Jakes believes that objection has been heard and has been put on the record, there would be no reason to bring it up again. If objection has been made and it's not being recorded, it's clearly not going to be on the transcript. So it's a catch-22, Your Honor.
I just want to understand, if I may, are you also saying, I mean, because if objection's made, one would expect a judge to rule on it. Are you also saying the judge ruled on that and that wasn't captured by the transcript? I just want to make sure I understand your position here, if you could help me.
Thank you, Your Honor. It was unclear if the judge had ruled on that at that point, but it was so clear and obvious to everyone in the courtroom what was happening that it should have been clear that there was lost connection. It was certainly clear to everyone in the courtroom. There was no question about that. But because the audio technology that was adopted in the wake of COVID-19 did not adequately and constitutionally preserve the record, that is not the fault of Mr. Jakes. And again, I believe in reviewing just briefly the Matthews factors, I believe that the government has a significant interest in preserving the proper record and having adopted the Zoom technology and created zero additional safeguards to protect for exactly instances like this did not protect his due process rights.
But we have a process, and that is the transcripts. The transcripts are the official record. And as Judge Rodenberg pointed out, Rule 110.05 allows correction or modification of the record. And when I look at the transcript, as Judge Justin points out, it says, when I look at lines 18 and 19 on page 9, the court says, Mr. Van, let's go off the record. And then it says a discussion was held off the record. Discussion was held off the record in a breakout room. The proceedings in this matter were paused and other proceedings took place. Then it says the court, let's go back on the record. The court did look at its notes from when we were interrupted with another case this morning. At that point, I had been asking about exhibits, and so we will go on the record now. Mr. Van Meveren, do you have objections to the exhibits? And then it goes into a colloquy between you and the court. There's no indication there. It's pretty clear to everybody that you were back on the record, but there's no indication there of any interruption, of any loss of connection, of missing out on any part of the testimony by the witness. So, and there's no indication that the district court even ruled on it. There's nothing there. So how can we make a decision when there's nothing in the record?
Your Honor, I think that the courts are very fluid in dealing with Zoom technology problems and have come to adopt and handle other matters and even other matters relating to this very case when these types of things happen. In the instance before the court, when technology was lost, the court went into another hearing, a connection was reestablished, exhibits were discussed, and then the court fluidly went into the exhibits. But again, it is counsel for Jake's belief that the objection was clearly put on the record, as we objected several times. It was very clear to counsel's attorney, to Jake's attorney. That is exactly why we are before the court. That is exactly why we are. So on that, we would request that we reverse remand for a new evidentiary hearing. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your oral arguments and your briefing. We appreciate it. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe.